Anarchopreneur, episode number 52, from survival blog to successful business with Daisy Luther. All right, here we go.
Government is inefficient and should be dissolved.
What government should actually do is just leave people alone to buy and sell freely among themselves. If they just leave self-interested traders to compete with one another, markets are guided to positive outcomes as if by an invisible hand.
It's free markets that are moral because you only succeed if you meet the needs and wants of other people.
One of the hard things for people to understand is that the more you try to control an economy, the more quickly it falls apart.
Capitalism, God's way of determining who is smart and who is poor.
Free Market Squad in the place to be. Thank you for taking an hour out of your week to hang with me. I am your host with the Hero Complex, the High Priest of Propaganda, Nathan Frazier. And this week, we're going to be interviewing Daisy Luther of The Organic Prepper. It is a prepping blog that Daisy has been able to turn into a business that supports her and her children and provides her the lifestyle and the ability to be the mother that she wants to be. This is going to be an awesome story. I don't want to spoil it for you though. So real quick, I'm going to give a shout out to the networks that pick up this here podcast. First of all, Truth Frequency Radio Network, much love and thank you. UCY.TV, much love, thank you. And LRN.FM, of course, much love and thank you for picking up this unprogramming and rebroadcasting it to your listeners. If you want more, you can find more over at NathanFrazierShow.com. That's the official website. And without any further ado, let's just jump into this week's interview with my guest, Daisy Luther. Daisy Luther, thank you for joining us today. I don't even really know exactly where to start. I met you through Ben Settle's Facebook group and started checking out your posts and realized that we had a lot of mutual friends in common. I was kind of surprised that we weren't already connected, but we weren't. And that was, I started looking at your posts. I started looking at your work and I thought you'd be a perfect guest for the Anarchopreneur podcast. So thank you for joining us and welcome to the show.
Thank you. I am really happy to be here.
Well, I'm excited to have you. Now, the reason why I said I thought it was kind of weird that we weren't already connected is because when I went to check out your profile, we have a lot of very popular, in the Liberty community, we had a lot of mutual friends, and I had never heard of you before connecting with you in Ben's Facebook group, but I asked you if you'd come on the podcast, and you said that you actually had done podcast episodes before. So let's start there and let's talk about some of the Liberty community people that you're friends with and some of the podcasts that you've been on, just to let people know kind of where you're coming from and who you are.
Oh, sure. Well, let's see. I've been a guest of Popeye on Down the Rabbit Hole, okay. And I've been on Revolution Radio quite a few times and the Liberty Brothers and really all sorts of places. So it's been a lot of fun getting to know people who are very active in the pursuit of liberty.
Nice.
And who actually live it as opposed to just talking about it.
Well, there's a lot of that. We'll try not to condemn anybody. Hopefully nobody listening falls into that. But there's, I feel like there's definitely a lot of the My Liberty movement, as Popeye likes to call it, people that care about liberty when it comes to themselves, not so much when it comes to others.
Exactly.
Yeah. So let's start by talking about what your particular niche is. You run two websites that I know of, and both of them are fantastic, and they'd probably be valuable to my listeners just on surface, but also I kind of want to give or go into like a deep dive into what you're doing with those websites. But before we get into that, let our listeners know what it is that you do online, what websites you run.
Okay, well, I'm a blogger, and I started out with theorganicprepper.ca, which I opened back when I lived in Canada. Although I guess Canada's proximity to Russia makes people think that I'm somehow Russian. Anyway, the CA is from Canada because that's where I lived when I began that website. And that is an emergency preparedness website with It's got tons of information. There are literally thousands of articles that I've written over the years, and I try to provide practical, simple advice that anyone can apply. And these aren't just like end of the world, a nuke just hit us kinds of disasters, but things like losing your job, which it may only be a disaster to your family, but it's a full-blown economic collapse to the family that it happens to. We talk about things like winter storms. There's a million different places that a preparedness mindset can be helpful. And because people there were complaining that I kept bringing politics and liberty type of topics in there, I opened a second website called daisyluther.com where I can write basically whatever I feel like writing because it just has my name on it.
Okay. And what that's something that I hear often myself is if you're trying to be a marketing consultant, don't add your political opinions to things. Cause I, like you, I'm very outspoken in my political beliefs. I often get the advice, put your politics in your back pocket and, don't wear them on your sleeve so much. Between the two websites, organicprepper.com and daisyluther.com, do you see a negative consequence for doing the daisyluther.com stuff that you don't see in the Organic Prepper now that you've separated the two?
Not really. See, here's what I try to do. I try to follow the net likes and dislikes. So if more people like it than hate it, I feel like I'm winning. And while there are always people who complain when I bring something political in, there's about 100 people that are happy to hear it. And I refuse to do something where I can't be myself. I don't mind toning it down just a little bit because I really do want the information on the Organic Prepper to reach the people who need it. So I don't mind toning that down a little bit, but I'm still going to be myself and state my opinions because really, my businesses have been built on me being myself and being an opinionated person.
And how do you feel about, we kind of live in this world where, I mean, business owners have Facebook accounts, they have Twitter accounts. The president of the United States probably shares too much on Twitter. We live in this kind of like age of authenticity. Do you feel like authenticity can actually be a benefit to a business owner now? Is it still got the taboo that it used to have?
I think it really can be. And to be quite honest, if people really dislike the way I do things, then mine is not the business for them. So they can just go find someone that they agree with more. And I don't even mean that in a rude, go away kind of way. I just mean I'm not going to be able to make them happy. And that means in the future, they're just going to complain and complain and complain and suck up my time and energy by me trying to deal with their complaints. So if they don't like it, there are a million other prepping websites and political websites out there that would probably be more suitable for them.
Now, kind of take us back to the beginning when you first started doing this. What was your driving factor to start doing the Organic Prepper and what was the experience of getting that together and actually creating that blog?
Well, actually, I'm going to go a little bit before that. I used to work in the automotive industry, and I managed service departments at car dealerships. And this was a ton of work. We're talking 70, 80-hour work weeks. And I'm a single mom. And it really did get to the point that I was just absolutely exhausted. My children's father had passed away, and I was offered a severance package because the automotive industry wasn't doing very well. And I jumped at the chance because I was so tired of dealing with cranky people all day long and not really doing anything that I felt was meaningful. So I accepted the severance package and decided that it would, if I could really reduce my expenses, it would give me a full year to a year and a half of living expenses, and I could pursue something that I really wanted to do. And before this, my father had passed away, and he was ill for quite some time. And he said to me on the day before he passed away, he said, "So what are you going to do with your life? Because you don't seem like you're happy. You're not really accomplishing anything." And I was a little hurt, but you know, people are blunt when the end is near. So I said, "Well, I'm going to be a writer." And he said, "No, you're not, because you don't write. You just talk about writing. That's all you do. You talk about writing. So unless you sit down and you start writing every single day, you're never going to be a writer." And, you know, I put it aside at the moment, but it really stuck in my head. And so when I was offered the severance package, I thought, you know, now is my chance to do what my dad said that I should do. I should write every single day. And so I left my job. I took the severance package. We moved out to the boondocks. I mean, we didn't even have electricity all the time at the place we lived. And I got some freelance jobs working on other people's websites and learned to build my own. So that's how I got started.
Nice. Now, why did you pick the niche or the topic of prepping? What was it that drove you towards writing about that?
Well, I've always been interested in survivalism, preparedness, frugality, that kind of thing. And I also have a strong background in nutrition, which, you know, it isn't the field that I ended up in professionally, but I, you know, did study it quite a bit. So I wanted to combine my interests and basically just write about the things that we did every single day, which was living out there in the boondocks, trying to separate ourselves from the way everybody else does things, trying to live a more self-reliant lifestyle. So it kind of started as almost more of like a diary style blog, and then it just evolved.
So, and that was where I was going to actually go next with it, is a lot of people think, oh, I don't have the experience. People aren't going to listen to me. I haven't been doing this as long as other people have. What right do I have starting a blog about this? Did you struggle with those kind of thoughts at all when you started this?
Not one bit, because I did not start out saying, "I am here to tell you everything in the whole wide world." I started out, I literally couldn't keep a fire built, and I thought we were going to die because that was the only heat in our cabin. And I could not keep a fire going for more than 20 minutes. And, you know, thankfully there's autumn before winter, and I managed to learn to start a fire. But really, I recorded myself learning all of these things that people think that they're just going to go out and easily do. I don't know if you read very many survivalist websites, but everybody talks about their grand scheme. Oh, I'm just going to go live off the land. I'm going to go out to my cabin. And they think that they're going to be perfectly fine leaving their urban lifestyle and going to do just that. I'm here to tell you, if you don't have a Walmart pretty close by, you're going to have big trouble if you think you're just going to go from city life to living like that, because we definitely needed to purchase backups, and we definitely had a huge, huge learning curve.
Now, obviously, this is kind of, at this point at least, it's kind of like a labor of love. It's something that you feel passionate about. It's something that you feel like almost a form of activism. And that leads to a conflict that I see in a lot of people. I know a lot of people that want to be able to dedicate more time to their activism rather than just when I'm not doing my 9-to-5, I'm out on the street corner doing my activism. A lot of people want to monetize their podcasts, monetize their blogs. But a lot of people, especially if they feel like what they're doing is something that they're driven to give to the world, they have this anti-profit mindset about it. They feel like, I should just be doing this out of the kindness of my own heart. I shouldn't get paid for what I'm doing. This is about the movement, not about monetizing. But at the same time, it's kind of like this internal conflict that I see almost every single person that's passionate about some sort of activism have, where they want to be able to fund the activism. They want to be able to spend more time doing the activism, but they've got this voice in the back of their head that tells them they're not worthy, or it's somehow evil, or it's somehow immoral to make money or turn a profit based off of their activism. Was there any of that when you first started doing this, or was there, what led you from saying, okay, I need to be, you're a single mother, I don't know if you were at the time, but what led you to thinking about turning this into a business? And did you deal with any of those inner conflicts that I was just talking about?
I personally had no conflict at all, because I spend at least 50 hours a week writing, researching, photographing, editing, putting this information together in a way that people can access at no charge whatsoever on my website. So I wanted to be able to provide information for free, but I also want to make a living, because anyone who spends 50 hours a week on something deserves to be paid for their efforts. So no, I personally didn't have any problem with it. Of course, you have readers who say, oh, she's just in it for the money. Did you see those Amazon links in there? because I monetize in a lot of ways where nobody has to spend money, but if they want to, I offer the best recommendations I can for products. And if they get those products through a link they click on my website, I get a little bit of money from it. I also have advertisers who want to reach my readers. So in the sidebar, all sorts of things pop up in the sidebar. And that, again, is my effort to monetize in a way that doesn't cost anything to my readers. So yes, you get that, you will hear that, but there is nothing wrong with it. And if you really feel that your efforts aren't worth getting paid for, then your efforts probably aren't that great.
Yeah, that's true. For people that are listening that are trying to build like a blog or a podcast, or trying to take their activism and make it self-sufficient, or make it to where it pays for itself, or it helps them quit their 9-to-5 so that they can dedicate more time to it, what were some of the first ways that you were able to recoup some of the time and energy and money that you were putting into your two blogs, or if it was just one blog at the time?
Well, it was just one blog until just recently. The first thing I have to say is nobody makes a lot of money blogging immediately. It took a year before I was able to turn $1,000 a month profit, which is not enough to live on anywhere. So that was the last month of the first year that I made that money. And I was so excited, I can't even begin to tell you. So don't expect that you're just going to make money immediately, because you're not. I don't know any bloggers who just started a blog and made money. That's just not how it works. But there are some things that you can do. After you've got a few posts up there, you can apply for a Google AdSense account. This isn't a whole lot of money, but if you're getting some traffic, you might get $100 or $200 from that. Once you have a little bit of traffic going, you can also apply for an Amazon affiliate account. And that's what I mentioned before. You can recommend a good product, and if people click on it and purchase that product, you get a small commission. And it's best to try to have numerous streams of income. And it's also, in my opinion, best that you don't try to put yourself out there as this expert that people should buy a $1,000 product from the moment you open your blog. That's just not how it works, because why should they trust you? I mean, I don't have a $1,000 product, but if I did, I would have certainly waited a couple of years before launching such a thing. Now, smaller products like information products, ebooks, books that you self-publish through CreateSpace on Amazon, those are all viable options. And the idea is to have a lot of different streams of income, because, you know, you can lose your Google AdSense account at the snap of a finger. Quite a few of my blogging friends and website owning friends who are on that Washington Post Russian propaganda list had their Google AdSense accounts canceled immediately. And these were bigger sites that made $1,000 to $2,000 a month from Google. Now, I canceled with Google quite some time back because it just really wasn't worth the space on my website, the amount of money I was getting from them. But what you always have to realize is if your income comes from one source, they don't care. They'll cancel you. And then you're screwed. You've got bills to pay. You've got a server to pay for. You've got all this stuff. So you need as many streams of income as possible. And I have five or six myself. So if something happens to one of them, yeah, it'll smart a little bit, but I'll still be perfectly fine.
Nice. That's good advice. I personally, and not all from just one website, but I personally have probably four different streams of income right now. And that's, it gives you such a better feeling where, you know, if one of them dries up or if one of them comes to an immediate end, you still have those other three to fall back on while you build up another. It's kind of like sitting on a chair. If you've got four legs and one of them goes out, you've still got the three. But if you've only got the one leg and it goes out, you're hitting the floor.
You certainly are. The other thing about having the multiple streams of income, advertisers occasionally try to put pressure on you. Like, oh, I don't like what you posted, so I'm going to pull my ad. And, you know, publishers, they try to put pressure on you to change something you've written. The ability to be able to walk away from people who do things like that is priceless when it comes to freedom. I don't have to do anything I don't want to do to make anybody happy, because whatever amount of money they're paying me, I have other money.
Mm-hmm. And that's Go ahead.
Their money is just a part of the picture.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I've found too, is if I've got one client and they want to start bending me over and taking advantage of me, it's a lot harder to say no. But if I've got three clients and one of them starts acting up, I can just tell them, hey, I don't really need your money that much. And if you really want to act like this, you know, I'll just go ahead and call this quits right now. And that's kind of that's a very good position to be in. That's for sure.
Yes.
So let's talk a little bit about your lifestyle. You said that you're a single mother. Am I correct in my assumption that you homeschool?
Yes, I homeschool my 16-year-old.
Now,
my other daughter's a grown-up.
Okay, so that's something that a lot of us in the Liberty, in the prepper community, a lot of us are concerned about the education system, concerned about what kids are learning at school. And a lot of us would love to be able to not be at work, not 9 to 10 hours a day, and instead be able to homeschool our children. And you've been able to do that. How important is being able to run these businesses or run these blogs that you've been able to turn into a business? How important has that been in being able to afford you the opportunity to homeschool your children?
Oh, it wouldn't be possible otherwise. It really would not. My youngest daughter was not thriving at all in the public school system. She's a very intelligent girl. And my last straw with the school system was when the principal called me and said, you know, your daughter's a smart girl, but she refuses to just absorb the information. She always has to question the teacher when the teacher is lecturing. And I said, well, when I enrolled her in this school, you said that you prized critical thinking. Isn't that critical thinking that she wants to question the teacher? And they said, well, that's just not how they learn. And I said, yeah, you know, this isn't going to work for me. And I dropped everything. I drove to school and I pulled my daughter out in the middle of the day on a Wednesday afternoon and said, we're just not doing this anymore. And that was in ninth grade. And at that point, I had only been self-employed completely with no clients for about a year. And, you know, I wouldn't have been able to do this otherwise. And so I pulled her. And a year and a half later, she is graduating from high school at the age of 16.
Yeah, that's awesome. What do your kids think about the fact that mom doesn't do the traditional work thing, and you were able to take your daughter out and homeschool her? What from their point of view, to the best of your knowledge, what do they think about this?
Oh, they love it. They would both like to have businesses similar to this one day. And both of them are in the process of building their own businesses. My older daughter does technical support and virtual assistance for people who own websites. And she has her own little business doing that, which I'm going to say in another 6 months is going to be all she needs to do. And my youngest daughter is in the process of starting her own website as well as a homeschool project. And, you know, the other types of opportunities we get are just incredible. I took my youngest homeschool daughter on a road trip that was the perimeter of the country at the beginning of this school year to do a geography and history unit. And so we literally drove the perimeter of the entire United States, stopped where we wanted to stop, did some exploring, went to all sorts of historic places. And that's the way we learn.
Wow, that's amazing. And what comes up in my mind is the fact that the way that you've been able to teach your daughter and the example that you're setting is so much more relevant for the way that the economy is going compared to what the schools are preparing for kids nowadays.
Yes, that's absolutely right. And, you know, my oldest daughter went to public high school, went to university, and she was unable to find a job that paid more than $10 an hour after all of that. Now, we paid cash for her education. She's not in debt. So that gave her a little more freedom for looking for something that she wanted to do. But she has certainly seen the light that the regular way of doing things just doesn't work anymore. She said to me, "Mom, all of my friends are forced to work these jobs they hate because they have so much student debt that it's more than their rent every month." And I love the fact that she can see that.
Yeah, absolutely. You know what? We're coming up on a break. Stick around. We'll continue this conversation on the other side. Free Market Squad, don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Free minds, free markets, free people.
Okay, I drink a lot of coffee, and no, this isn't a My Magic Mud commercial, but it is a fact. I do drink a lot of coffee, probably too much, but I'm dependent. I'm a drug addict. I probably burn the candle at both ends way too much. Coffee helps me get going in the morning. It's what I use to get me cranking out my emails first thing in the morning. It's also what I use usually when I'm recording this podcast. I got a cup of coffee right next to me. I've not tried cold coffee. It's something actually that is brand new to me, the idea of cold brewing coffee. But Chris Janston, one of the cats in the Free Market Squad online community, he's got this business where he sells these, they're like mason jar brewing lid type things. Like it's like a screen that you put on top of your mason jar, and you fasten the lid and you're able to make cold brewed coffee. I'm still brand new to this. I'm going to look more into it. But I'm excited to find out more about it. And this is what's most exciting to me. This is a quasi invention of Chris's. It's an idea that he took and he put a unique twist on, his own unique twist on, and I'm stoked about it. It's great. It's great to see a member of the community creating their own product, and it's coffee. So I'm in. That means I'm going to be buying at least one of these for myself. I might be buying one for a friend as well. I'm excited to, according to Chris, cold brewing coffee is easier on your stomach. And it's something I'm excited to try. It's something new to me and I'm excited about. So I'm going to be ordering one and maybe two actually. And I wanted to invite you to do the same. You can check out these cool new cold brew coffee filters. They screw right into your mason jar. They allow you to make individual mason jars full of cold brew coffee at a time. Check them out at grinagaingoods.com. That's grinagaingoods.com. And I don't have an affiliate, but if you want to let them know that you heard about it here on Anarchopreneur, that would be dope. But definitely go check it out. If you're a coffee drinker and you want to try something new and exciting, or if you're already somebody who's cold brewing and you're looking for a unique way to do it, check out grinagaingoods.com. All right. How would you like to have your business shouted out right here in the middle of the show? You can do that by joining the Free Market Squad and taking part in Self-Promotion Saturdays. Every Saturday, we go on a self-promote rant, let everybody know about what it is that we provide. You can find out more information on how to join at freemarketsquad.com.
Let me ask you something. Haven't you ever been tempted to just break the rules and finally
get back at my big faceless corporate bosses for making me feel so small and insignificant?
Look at this, Marge. $58 and all of it profit. I'm the smartest businessman in the world.
Government can print money, but it's the entrepreneurs who really make the money.
Why don't you guys just make your cars cleaner and nicer and try to be better to your customers so that you can compete with Handy Car's popularity in the marketplace?
Shut up and take my money.
All right, Free Market Squad and the place to be. Welcome back to Anarchopreneur, the Nathan Fraser Show. I am your host with the Hero Complex, the High Priest of Propaganda over at the Church of the Invisible Hand, Nathan Fraser. You can check out more by going over to NathanFraserShow.com. That's the official home of this here podcast. And this podcast is the BYO Boss podcast. It's the podcast dedicated to helping you be your own boss, both politically and professionally. It's all about self-ownership and business ownership. And today's guest definitely embodies that. So without any further ado, let's just jump right back into this conversation with Daisy Luther of theorganicprepper.ca. All right, Daisy, we're just going to jump right back in to where we were at. We were talking about the public education system and even the higher learning education system not setting people up for the way that the economy seems to be going. It seems like we're still stuck in this preparing people to be mindless drones in a factory where that's just not where the jobs are going to be at in the future. And that's really right now not where they're at. You were talking about how both of your daughters have kind of taken creative pursuits in the work that they're doing. And you were talking about how one of them, she was saying other people that went to the university that she went to, her friends aren't in the position that she finds herself in, that they're stuck paying off these student loans. And I know personally, I'm a high school dropout, and so I don't have any student loans, completely autodidactic, self-taught when it comes to marketing and business ownership. And most of my adult life, I've worked next to people that make a couple of dollars more than me an hour, yet are completely saddled down with debt, so have way less disposable income than me. And now I find myself in a position where I'm making 10, 15 times the amount of money that these people are making. They went to 6 to 8 years of college after high school. I'm a high school dropout, yet I'm able to earn just tons more than them. What are your thoughts? Obviously, you pulled one of your daughters out. What are your thoughts on where the economy's going, where technology is taking us, and the goals of the education system as far as being compatible with that?
Well, I think you nailed it with regard to the education system, just preparing kids to be mindless drones. I see more and more of this where it's just brainwashing. It's like this Marxist crazy brainwashing. I mean, you've got idiotic majors like women's studies and interpretive dance. What the heck do you think you're going to do with that? I mean, and then you have universities making up jobs so that these people can actually say, oh, look, we placed all of our students. I was writing an article before Christmas, and it was about this ridiculous education system attempt to eradicate anything that might be politically incorrect around the holidays, and, you know, calling it winter holiday as opposed to anything else. And I'm not saying this from a Christian point of view at all. I'm just saying that they're really muffling people's ability to have a conversation without monitoring themselves. And so these universities had things like integration specialists and, you know, just these politically correct policing jobs. And I swear they made them up just to place some of the people with ridiculous majors.
Yeah, I would agree. The thing that really scares me about it is how many of these people are coming out of the the higher education system with not only the inability to find work that is consistent with the way that they've been educated, but it seems like more and more just the inability to deal with conflicting opinions, to deal with insulting aspects of the world. The world is not the safe space. The world is not the cut and dry black and white version of reality that, you know, that college seems to be setting these people up for. And it seems like what I would think, at the very least, college should be setting people up to think critically, should be setting people up to be able to deal with the fact that that not everybody is going to think like them in the real world, that they're going to have to deal with conflict. And it seems like, at least in the last maybe 5-10 years, maybe even more than that, it's been going the exact opposite direction.
When you always get a trophy, you have no idea how to deal with life when you don't get a trophy. And it, to me, that really sums up the entire issue. People have no idea how to function in a world that is so very different than the way that they were educated. They don't have consequences for their actions. So to them, when they use their little social justice rhetoric to tell off an employer and the employer finds them, they're absolutely gobsmacked because they can't imagine how someone might not want to hear about their opinion at all, might not care, and there might be consequences to those actions. So that's really a huge issue that I see. They just do not understand how the real world works. It's a culture shock.
Yeah, it's kind of scary. I'm hoping that maybe we'll start seeing some positive pushback the other way. Let me ask you this, being that you're a homeschooler, and what is your thoughts about the homeschooling community? Are these concerns, are you tapped in? I mean, you're tapped into the prepper community. Are you tapped into the homeschooler community? Are these concerns that are being addressed? Are these things that are helping the homeschooler community grow and thrive?
To be honest, no, I'm not really involved in the homeschooling community that much because our curriculum is a little bit more secular, and I have found that many people who homeschool are doing so for religious reasons, and that's just it's just not the route that we're going. So I don't tend to hang out with those groups very much.
Gotcha. Okay, So maybe where brainwashing is going on one direction in the public schools, it might be going a different direction in a large part of the homeschooling community.
Well, you know, I wouldn't even call it brainwashing. It's just a different route than we're taking.
Okay, fair enough. Let's jump back to your websites and monetizing your websites, if you don't mind. We'll kind of pivot the conversation. What is it that you're finding is working as far as you said you have multiple different ways to monetize off of it? For somebody that's listening and maybe they've been running their website for a year or two and they've experimented with Google AdWords and they've just not found that $3.28 a week is cutting it. What are some things that you're finding that are working, or what are some of the things that you find to be more leverageable than the traditional routes like AdWords and affiliate programs through Amazon?
Well, okay, there's a few things. First of all, let me say that I have not done any type of advertising. I have not spent money promoting my website until just recently, and I'm just playing around with some Facebook ads and some things like that. But all of my traffic is completely organic. Some of the things that I have done to make money, I make a lot of money from Amazon Affiliates program. And lots of people scoff at that because it only pays like 3 to 8%. But when you have enough people clicking on those links and ordering things, it really does add up. So I am a huge proponent of Amazon affiliate programs. I also have a website called Prepper's Market, through which I sell emergency food, because that's a product, of course, that goes beautifully with everything else that I do. So you can set up websites to sell dropship products that relate to your core product. I haven't personally had any luck with ClickBank, but I know other people who make a great deal of money from ClickBank. ClickBank has all sorts of affiliate products, some of which pay really, really high percentages. So that's another type of ad that you can use if you're looking for something to sell. If you don't have a product, the best thing you can do is find affiliate products that will speak to your market.
So let's talk about affiliate versus having your own product, because I know that you have a couple of different things that you offer as your own products. This is something that I have my own products. I offer my own products. I've also done affiliate work and I've done copywriting for other people's products. One of the things that I find over and over amongst the copywriting and the marketing community is a lot of people prefer selling their own product to their own market over selling somebody else's product, over selling or being an affiliate or being involved in launches for other people's products. What has your experience been as far as being able to leverage your own community, your own brand for selling your own products versus selling the affiliates? Like you were saying, you were doing pretty well with Amazon. Do you kind of agree with the idea that it's easier to sell your own stuff, or has your experience been the opposite?
When you're starting out, you don't have the credibility to sell your own stuff as much as you might want to. So people get very tied into the dogma of whoever their mentor is. And that's not to say that they're not getting good advice, but there isn't a one-size-fits-all kind of advice. You really need to be open to experimentation and to trying a few different things, because different things are going to work in different markets. My first product was just a self-published book on Amazon that I sold for $8. And, you know, I still make money off of products that I started, you know, years ago when I first got started out. The thing that you have to remember is not to scoff at these small amounts of money, because they really do add up. Now, I don't really recommend doing things like Google AdSense and taking up your valuable sidebar real estate for something that is not going to really directly benefit you. And that's a problem that I see quite a lot on other people's websites, is they're doing things that aren't really going to benefit them and that aren't going to speak to their audience. So I do have an ad network that I use now, but they're a lot more relevant to my audience and they pay a whole lot better than Google AdSense. However, I keep the top section of my sidebar for products that my audience will actually use. And, you know, if you have a dog website and you sell, or you're talking about pets and pet care and things like that, selling pizza on your sidebar, it just doesn't work. So you want to make sure that whatever you're recommending, it's something that speaks to your audience. And this I can't stress enough.
Yeah, I've seen like you go to a vegan website where it has all types of stuff about how to live a vegan lifestyle. And then the Google AdSense on the side is an advertisement for Smash Brothers or Smash Burger or something like that. And it's just like,
Yeah, I got nailed with that a couple of weeks ago because I wrote about something making fun of spending all your money going to Disney World. And all of a sudden, all these Magic Kingdom ads were popping up in my sidebar.
Yeah, it's the automated process. The algorithms don't always get it right.
Nope. Nope. But the point of this is that you the things that are going to profit you need to also profit your audience for the best possible return.
Yeah, absolutely. It's got to be about serving your audience. Now, I noticed that you do collect emails. You have a couple of different ways for people to opt in on your website. How important do you think as a blogger or a podcaster, how important or just a business person in general, how important do you feel that growing an email list is?
There is nothing more important than your email list, because if you get kicked off of Facebook, which has happened to me more than once, if you get kicked off of Twitter, if you get kicked off of all of the other ways that you're reaching your audience, you can still reach them if you have their email address.
So you said that the majority up until just recently, all of your traffic has been organic. And you're just now starting to experiment with advertising. How have you incentivized people to join your email list, and what has been some lessons that you've learned along the way about growing your email list without dumping money into Facebook ads or Google pay-per-click?
Well, you know, it's kind of funny because I started my blog, I guess, in a very unprofessional fashion. I had no idea I was supposed to be collecting email addresses. I really did not know this until a fair bit later. And so I did not start collecting email addresses until about a year and a half ago. I could have been way further ahead if I had known some of this stuff. So, you know, I have tried numerous different products for my freebie. Initially, I don't even recommend you bribe people at all. If you've already got a readership and you're just starting your email list, don't bother bribing them. Just put a sign up and milk that until it starts slowing down with the signups. Then you need to start doing a bribe, and that bribe needs to be relevant to your audience. It needs to be something useful. My current one is a self-reliance little library of some of the most popular articles that have been on my websites. They're all how-tos, like how to survive certain types of disasters and little things like that. And it's just this little library of PDF downloads that people can access.
No, can I ask you a question real quick about that?
Of course.
A lot of people think that if they're going to have like a what you called a bribe, an ethical bribe, mm-hmm. or an opt-in freebie, a lot of people think they have to create something brand new, and the objection would be, well, if people can already find that stuff on your website, why would they sign up for your email list to get something they can already access? What was your thought process behind that?
Because they're lazy. They're going to sign up. They're not going to go look for that. They're going to sign up and just download the PDF. Plus, when it's on your website, it's not in downloadable format. So, no, there is nothing wrong with using something you already have. Of course, there's nothing wrong with creating something brand spanking new either. However, it's not really 100% necessary. Now, this is coming from someone with literally thousands of articles. So it would take people quite some time to unearth something I've already published that I might have published a couple of years ago. So if you've only got 6 articles on your website and you're going to use one of them as a freebie, that's probably not going to work.
Okay. I've done things where I've taken previous articles that were really good articles and had a really good response, and then repurposed them into a course and basically covered the exact same material, but instead of it being an article, I made it a video that had graphics to go along with it and said, hey, this is available on the site if you want to read through it, but these 3 posts combined into this one little mini course. And I've seen tremendous signups from stuff like that, but I have heard people raise the objection, well, if they can already find that information, why would they sign up for something that's already accessible for them?
Yep. And to those people, I just say, okay, no problem. Happy Googling.
Right.
I just, you know, you really can't get too caught up into the objections of other people. If most people seem to like it, go with it. Now, if everyone is complaining about something, there's probably something to it.
Yeah. So what, I guess going forward from where you started collecting emails and then started doing an opt-in, up until, I guess, recently, what are some of the things that you found are working? Because this, obviously, marketing is an ever-growing, ever-evolving. There's always the fundamentals that work, but there's always new twists that we can put on them. What are some of the things that that you're finding good results with now?
You know, it's really funny. Being yourself, I know that sounds just like the most trite thing on the face of the earth, but just being very true to yourself, knowing what your message is that you're trying to get across and adhering to that message. When you do that, you create an audience that is passionate about the same things that you are. And when you have an audience that is passionate about the same things that you are, it's a whole lot easier to come up with products that those people are going to want.
Nice. I hate hogging the mic, but I just got to share an experience. I did a webinar this morning on like the fundamentals of marketing and business building. And I did three different Facebook ads for it, and I sent out a whole series of different emails. And the one that got overwhelmingly the most response was just a story that I told, and this might be distasteful to some of the listeners, but that's okay. I told a story about a business lesson that I learned selling drugs at raves when I was a teenager. And that one email and that one Facebook ad actually pulled in almost half of the people that signed up for the webinar. So it was one of those things where every single person in business and marketing would say, do not run that ad. Do not send that email. But it was a true story, and it was a relatable story for me. And it ended up getting the greatest response out of the whole campaign that I ran for the webinar.
You know, that is a great story. And it's funny because it makes me think of something else. You mentioned that you and I met in Ben Settle's Facebook group. One thing I've noticed about him and the people that he surrounds himself with is everybody is very much themselves. And it's a really successful group of people. And they've built their success on being true to themselves. And by really basically declining people entry that don't fit in with their message or their product.
Yeah. That kind of goes back to what we were talking about with authenticity earlier. Mm-hmm. Real quick, I've got about five more minutes with you, and I really do appreciate you spending the time with me and my audience today. If you could say one thing that you've implemented in growing your email list that's had the best results for you recently, what would it, for somebody who's got an email list going and just looking for ways to take it to the next level, what have you been experimenting with, or what have you tried recently that you found good results with?
Back to Ben Settle, I email every single day. Nice. I send them a little note every single day. And there's one other success key that I'd like to bring up that's slightly off the topic of email, if that's okay.
Absolutely.
If you have another job or another thing that is bringing in money, maybe you work for clients or you freelance or you go to work full time, get your butt up early and work for yourself first. You will live if you get up at 4 o'clock in the morning, and your business will thrive. Instead of giving the very best, most energetic part of yourself to somebody else, get up and get to work. You work for yourself first. And not only will you be giving the best part of yourself to your own business, it's so easy to put something off if you wait till the end of the day to do it. You know, something comes up with the kids, or you stay late at work, or you're just tired and you don't feel like doing it. Get up and work for yourself first.
So if you don't pay yourself first, you might end up not paying yourself at all.
You won't. I see it happen all the time. People are always asking, oh, how do you do this? I want to do what you do. And I tell them this. And the ones who actually do it, who actually get up and do their own stuff first, are the ones who are successful.
Awesome. Daisy, this has been a fantastic conversation. I really do appreciate you spending the time with us. Where can people go to check out your prepping websites one more time before we're out of here?
My websites are theorganicprepper.ca and daisyluther.com.
And what's the unique twist if people were going to go to one or the other? What would be the benefit of going to one versus the other for people?
The Daisy Luther website is political commentary and current event commentary, and the other website is very much prepping and how-to.
Awesome. Again, thank you so much for spending the time with us. I really do appreciate it, Daisy. You have a wonderful day.
Thank you.
All right, Free Market Squad, I hope you enjoyed that interview with Daisy Luther, the organic prepper. You can check out her sites again, theorganicprepper.ca and daisyluther.com. If you did enjoy this interview, make sure to check out more over at nathanfrasershow.com. And before we're out of here, I'm going to give a quick plug for the Free Market Squad. The Free Market Squad is a community of liberty-minded individuals who also happen to be business owners. We talk about marketing. We talk about business development, all kinds of great conversations going on with intelligent, liberty-loving business people. If you want to connect with a community like that, make sure that you're a part of the Free Market Squad. You can find out more information by going to freemarketsquad.com. I've also got a blog there. I've got a resources page with all the different resources that I have used to build both of my two businesses. A bunch of resources for the BYO Boss community out there. So check it out. freemarketsquad.com is the website for more information on how you can be your own boss. And yeah, we're about out of time. Again, Daisy Luther, thank you for joining us this week. Check out her stuff, daisyluther.com and theorganicprepper.ca. Until next time, Free Market Squad, faith in each other, not in authority. Be your own boss. Hashtag BYO boss. And I am out of here. Deuces.